This is the KVNF Regional Newscast for Wednesday, February 24th. I'm Gavin Dahl. The Grand Junction Airport had a busy night on Saturday. A malfunctioning weather system at the Montrose Airport caused many flights to be redirected to land in Grand Junction instead, the Grand Junction Sentinel reports. Passengers were then bused back to Montrose. The weather system is owned and operated by the National Weather Service and provides altimeter settings. Diversions to the Grand Junction Airport from Aspen are common in winter. A stretch of Highway 50 between Montrose and Gunnison is slated for major reconstruction this spring, but local residents are objecting to the near-total closure of the artery during the work. The Little Blue Creek Canyon project will take about 2 years to complete. Since it's a steep canyon, the current plan calls for the road to be closed 19 hours every weekday, the Montrose Press reports. The $40 million project is funded in part by a federal Lands Access Program grant. Local and state officials have signed a letter to new U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg proposing that the highway be opened for 3 hours more each day to mitigate the impacts to local agriculture and residents. Rehabilitation efforts are underway in the area devastated by the Pine Gulch fire near Fruta. The fire started on July 31st by a lightning strike, burned more than 139,000 acres. This week, more than 20,000 pounds of fresh seed were broadcast to help regrow the sagebrush, pinyon, and juniper. The Grand Junction Sentinel reports the Bureau of Land Management received $3.5 million from the Department of Interior for rehabilitation efforts. Crews made 14 to 18 trips a day over the 22,000 acres where the fire burned hottest and the soil won't absorb water or support natural regrowth. And a Grand Junction animal shelter is helping to open a facility in Delta. The Royce Hurst Humane Society has partnered with the City of Delta and Delta County in renovating and expanding the city-owned animal shelter on 4th Street. The grand opening is this Sunday. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment says COVID-19 vaccine supplies may increase in coming weeks with potential new manufacturers. From KDNK, Kathleen Shannon reports.
In Garfield County, Mountain Family Health Centers and City Market Pharmacies have joined local hospitals in distributing the COVID-19 vaccine. And across the state, Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies began giving out shots on February 12th. As more vaccines become available, the state will make contracts with even more providers. So, how does the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment determine which agencies are suited to distribute the vaccine? Here's General Brigadier Scott Sherman.
The contracts will only be cut with the largest providers that we have or providers that can actually do it. It'll be a combination of providers who have the scheduling capability, because that'll be key for these mass vaccination sites. And some ambulance services in the state, too, will also be involved with that. The scope of work is being developed along with the contracting done on that. It'll be a competitive bid as there's done in any state process. And we'll move from there. It's definitely got to be with providers that have the capability to schedule it, to handle the dosage, and to administer it.
Colorado passed a milestone this week. The state has administered over 1 million COVID vaccines. The department estimates that about 90% of people in groups 1A and healthcare workers in group 1B have received their shots. In the 70 and older group, the state has vaccinated 86% of its goal number. For KDNK News, I'm Kathleen Shannon.
The pandemic has caused huge revenue shortfalls in state budgets across our region, and in some places that's meant a renewed conversation about taxes. But one of those conversations may not be what you'd expect, the Mountain West News Bureau's Maggie Mullen reports.
So a story about taxes. You may be thinking this is going to be a lot of numbers, or maybe a bit boring. But what about awkward or taboo?
It still is something that gets whispered about.
That's Jen Simon, and she's talking about periods. Simon is with the Wyoming Women's Action Network, and she says that cultural stigma prevents important public policy discussions. For example, affordability.
So if you can't actually afford products, you might not go to school on those days. So you might miss out on part of your education. You might not be able to go to work on those days. So you might miss out on income. It's really incredibly problematic.
So what does someone's menstrual cycle have to do with the debate about taxes?
The Revenue Committee's called to order, and our first bill, is it Senate File 27? Is that the right number?
For the Wyoming legislature, it came up during a January Revenue Committee meeting. Republican Senator Affie Ellis presented a bill to exempt menstrual products from taxation. But the bill didn't even make it out of committee.
On the Senate side, I knew that the bill would likely not advance. Wyoming has significant budget issues that we're dealing with right now. And so any loss or foregone revenue collection, I knew would be a challenge.
If it had been signed into law, Wyoming would have joined a minority of states in the U.S. that exempt menstrual products from taxes. Laura Strassfeld is with Period Equity, a nonprofit legal organization that's working on what they call menstrual equity.
And by that, we mean working to make sure that menstrual products are free and accessible and safe.
Traditionally, menstrual products have included things like tampons, pads, and liners. In recent years, other products like the menstrual cup and even period underwear have gotten more popular, with people seeking out environmentally friendly options. Prices range from around $10 a month for tampons to roughly $35 for a menstrual cup. But in most states, one thing is the same.
They still tax menstrual products.
In the Mountain West, Nevada is the only state to specifically get rid of the tax. That was back in 2018. Strassfeld says she'd like to see more states do that, especially since the problem also disproportionately impacts people on a limited income.
Because they're purchased in small quantities, they can't be purchased in bulk and online, and the prices are higher in places where poor people buy these products. So I challenge anyone to find a more regressive tax than the tampon tax.
Is it more complicated than that? Catherine Lawhead thinks so. She's with the Tax Foundation, a nonpartisan tax policy research organization. She says taxing menstrual products does make sense.
An ideal sales tax is one that has a broad base, but as low of a rate as possible in order to cover government services that are provided. Now, a lot of goods have been exempted over time, often for political reasons.
Those goods run the gamut from hair loss products and private jet parts to gun club memberships and donuts. And Lawhead says making those exemptions is not the best approach.
Because that results in a sales tax base that picks and chooses different things. It's a smaller base, and that leads to higher rates over time.
And then there's the timing. We're in an economic downturn right now.
Now, of course, is a time when we are seeing a lot of revenue uncertainty. And so it does make sense to be extra cautious about what we are doing to the tax code.
In Wyoming, at least, the discussion has died down to a whisper once again. Though it's possible if it picks back up, the debate won't be just about taxes. Across the pond, Scotland just became the first country in the world to make menstrual products free to anyone who needs them. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Maggie Mullen.
That does it for the KVNF Regional Newscast. I'm Gavin Dahl. Special thanks to reporter Kate Redmond. Support local independent media by becoming a KVNF member today.